cloud of night that covers me. Black is the pit from pole to pole. I think whatever gods may be for my unconquerable soul. In the fell clutch of circumstance, I have not winced nor cried aloud. Under the bludgeons of chance, my head is bloody, but unbowed. Beyond this place of wrath and tears looms but the horror of the shade. And yet the menace of the years finds and shall find me unafraid. It matters not how straight the gate, how charged with punishments the scroll. I am the master of my fate. I am the captain of my soul.
The Gentleman Badass Podcast is brought to you by 88 Tactical. 88 Tactical is a multifaceted organization that offers top-level training courses for civilians as well as law enforcement and military personnel. It's also a family-centric community that teaches life-saving skills, cultivates confidence, and provides a unique entertainment experience. 88 Tactical offers an unrivaled broad range of instruction in firearms, self-defense, anti-bullying, martial arts, field medicine, rappelling, bushcraft and survival, and much more. Whether you're a top-tier operator taking high-threat CQB or a child dealing with bullies at school, 88 Tactical has the training to suit your needs. You can find 88 Tactical at 15350 Shepherd Street in Omaha, Nebraska, or online at 88tactical.com. Thanks again to 88 Tactical for their support of the Gentleman Badass Podcast. Welcome to the Gentleman Badass Podcast. Thanks for tuning in. This is Josh Kidney, and today we've got a doozy of an episode for you. Austin Anderson is a stand-up comedian, a radio show host, and a fellow podcaster, and he's a seriously funny guy. Part of the reason I wanted to talk to Austin is because he's unafraid to say what he actually thinks, and in a culture that loves destroying people who don't fall in line, this is an uncommon trait to find. In this episode, Austin doesn't hold back. We talk about his early days as a prankster in school, crazy things he's experienced doing comedy, how comedy has changed in today's PC culture, and the current trend of attempting to demasculize the American male. For those who are easily offended, consider this your trigger warning. I do find it humorous that, save for a few curse words here and there, I'd consider this episode mostly kid-friendly, but there will be grown adults who may potentially melt down after listening. Anyway, you've been warned. So without further ado, here's our episode with Austin Anderson. All right, Gentleman Badass Podcast number 368. Actually, no, this is probably episode 5 or 6. I'm not sure what order we're going to be doing these in, but this is definitely not number 368. But today we've got Austin Anderson in the studio. Austin is a stand-up comedian. He's been on my radar for quite a while. I've seen him live at the Funny Bone. And what else? I've heard him on the radio, seen you on what, America's Got Talent,
yeah,
and Comedy Central. So we might get into those stories today, maybe, maybe not.
Sure.
But regardless, Austin, thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, guys, thanks for having me.
Thank you.
When I was like, the gentleman badass wants me.
Yeah.
They think I'm a badass. I was like, all right, cool.
Yeah.
I'm honored.
Set. All right. So, you know, just to start out with it, we always kind of like to get into the background of our guests to give, you know, us and our listeners an idea of, you know, the real you. So give us a little bit of your background. What was little Austin like? What was he like growing up? And then
I was a terror, man. I was Dennis the Menace, but okay. I did things with a laugh to the point where, you know, like people were frustrated with me, but I got off because I could just like diffuse things with humor.
Okay.
But I mean, I spent times like when, you know, the neighbor I grew up with, we were playing tennis in our circle. And, you know, I pick up rocks. I'm like, let's play tennis with rocks, you know, and hit a rock right through his front glass door. And I still remember his, you know, he goes, and his mom like looked like down the hallway and just all the glass fell down, you know, or even like one time we were behind his house was a park and we're like, let's go hit golf balls. So we're back there hitting golf balls. But meanwhile, there's a family having a picnic at the bottom of the hill.
I know where this is going.
I nail a ball in this, and I felt terrible because it was like it was crazy. Hits this guy's kid, this little girl, in the back of the head with a golf ball, and she just like goes forward or whatever. This dude's like running up the hill, you know. And
is this the same kid both times?
It was his house.
Is he in therapy today?
He might be. I haven't heard from him in a while, man. But you know, so like that kind of getting in trouble, and I just always had an issue with authority. I think my neighbor growing up, you know, guy was just a huge jerk, and I'd go get the mail and he'd scream at me like, don't step in my grass. So my buddy had a three-wheeler. I just drove it through his lawn and slammed the brakes and just tore it up. I filled up water balloons with bleach and threw it in his yard. Oh. So that was kind of my, like, I mean, I just was constantly doing things. I mean, I don't know. I bought a mini bike in middle school and then a three-wheeler, rode it everywhere.
You know? Are you originally from Omaha?
Yeah.
So where'd you go to school here?
Millard South.
Okay.
Anderson, middle, and then Millard South. And, you know, then the cops would be, like, trying to get me, and I ran from them a couple times, got busted a couple times too. They made me push it back. But
have you ever run into any of the teachers that you?
Yeah, well, I mean, even like teachers now on Facebook, they'll contact me. They like me, but they, you know, I was uncontrollable. Let's just put it this way: on my last day of high school, they hired a security guard just for me. they escorted me to every one of my classes and then out of the building.
Wow.
And even to the point, then when I came back in, cause I forgot something, the guy was like, he's back in. So they were so concerned. They thought I was going to do a senior prank. And so since I couldn't do one, I really needed to graduate. So, but I wore an eye patch when I graduated. And
did the walk?
Yeah. And the assistant principal came up to me and was like, you can't wear that. I was like, actually I can. My little brother poked me in the eye with a little figure, you know, and I lift up the patch and I just flicker my eyeball and she was like, okay, whatever. So I do the walk and I have like getting the diploma, that picture, you know, wearing an eye patch.
For the rest of your life.
And man. I think it might have been because I put a car alarm system in my locker, and this was probably like a year after, you know, this was a year or two after Columbine. And it was like in this plastic case and it was bolted shut and had a hole in it with a switch where you could pull a string. And what it was is my uncle actually gave it to me as a Christmas present. So when I opened it, it went off, but it was bolted shut. So he had to unscrew it. But he's like, you can have it. So I put it in my locker. And I went up there one day and I was, and I pulled the string and it's going, wheel. And I casually walked back to class, who my buddy Adam Devine was in, from Workaholics and stuff. And he opens it. He was like, was that you? And I'm like, just go in. So they thought it was a bomb. And they threw it outside the school and like blocked down the whole school. And then they realized it was my locker. So they called off the bomb squad and then brought it all the way through the school. You know, it's like, and then we get to the, you know, I get called to the principal's office. It's on his desk. It's still going off because it's bolted shut. And he's like, will you turn this fucking thing off or whatever? And so I unbolt it and turn it off. And he was like, why would you do this? He's like, you've disrupted the whole school the whole day and all this. And I was like, my instincts kicked in. I'm like, dude, people kept breaking into my locker. And so I had to take matters into my own hands. And he goes, all right, I know you didn't do this to be funny. And he gave it back to me.
Wow.
And how long after that did you use it again if they gave it back to you?
Dude, you know, after that incident, because I think they called my parents, it disappeared. Yeah. I think I brought it home. I never saw it again. I think my parents took it away.
Oh, man.
Because I would have used it everywhere. Like, it was awesome.
So we now that you're connected.
So that's kind of my, you know, but I mean, yeah.
If now that you've connected back with some of your teachers and they find out that you're a stand-up comic, is there a lot of, yeah, could see that one coming? And
yeah, they were. I mean, the first time I did stand up was at my senior banquet.
Oh, cool.
So I got class clown, and yeah, I wanted to do stand up. The reason why I wanted to be a comedian, you know, my buddy calls me up one day, we're freshmen, and he's like, you know, I was a chubby kid, you know, and I'm like, I'm a loud guy. He's like, dude, there's like this fat guy that yells like you. He's hilarious. It was Sam Kinison.
Oh, wow. Mm.
So we went and watched, he had just died. We watched the documentary on his death, you know, rented all of his deals at Blockbuster. And I just never laughed so hard in my entire life. I'm like, there's no rules there, man. I'm like, you get paid to just say like what you feel or like how you think of the world. Mm. And I'm like, I'm going to do that. So yeah. So then the first time was being 17 and at the senior banquet, and they had just changed the Indians to the Patriots. Because Indians were racist. Mm-hmm. So we got a vote, they said, but it was between the Patriots and the Rough Riders because DMX was a huge deal. You know? Like, so there's no way looking back at it, there's no Rough Riders.
No.
You know, it was definitely the Patriots. So the one joke I remember that I did was I was like, oh, we changed the Indians to the Patriots because it was racist. And I'm like, but the Patriots dressed up as Indians and threw tee off about to frame the Indians. Way more racist.
Oh, yeah.
This name is the most racist name. And that was one of the jokes that I remember and got a standing ovation from, you know, all my classmates. Wow. And then after that, there was really no scene in Omaha. There's nowhere to do stand-up. On Mondays, I drove all the way to Kansas City to do 3 minutes at Stanford & Sons.
Wow.
Load up me and my buddies in the van, go down, you know. They'd put me in the, with the comics, be like, you want a beer? I was like 17. I'm like, yeah. I'm like, being a comic is awesome. And then moved to California after I was a year older than Adam Devine, moved to California with Adam, lived out there for a few years.
Awesome.
Were you getting paid at this point?
No. The first time I got paid was in California. They asked me to do a show, and I was just, you know, a naive kid. Come to find out after the show, it was at a Mexican bar. This lady just screamed at me in Spanish the whole time. So I'm just like yelling at the Spanish woman. She's yelling at me. I have no idea what's going on. I had to wait outside on the curb until it was my turn. I got paid $1.50. They split it between all the comics.
Wow.
It was in Compton. I found out when I was leaving, I got lost. I was in Compton at 19 at an all-Mexican bar.
Oh, man.
Screaming at a Spanish lady.
We had Shay DeGann on one of the podcasts. And I've known Shay for years, but I didn't know that he was a stand-up comic. And I was asking him, like, well, how much did you get paid? And he's like, oh, you know, I was like $10. And I was thinking, damn, well, maybe you were just shit. But no, I guess they just exploited you guys, man, in the beginning.
It's a long way until the top if you want to rock and roll, man. No. Like, it really is. And I mean, it took a while. Everything I did was for free for years. Mm. And, you know, with getting paid here and there. And then when I'd get into clubs like the Funny Bone and host, you know, then I'd start making money.
Okay.
How many times would it been that tough? How many times did you almost walk away? Or was there ever a point?
Never at the beginning. But later on in life, I've walked away several times.
Yeah.
Like, I'm like, I just can't do it anymore. You know, for just a multitude of reasons. But, you know, it's a curse. That's what I say. Like, young comics, you know, if the real ones, you know, Shay, he did it for a while. He's like, this is stupid. I'm out. He's not cursed. Like me, I'm like, I'm going to get out. But it's like, in this abusive relationship where I go to stand up and it just beats the shit out of me. And I'm like, I'm done with you. I'm tired of this. I won't come back. And then 6 months later, I'm like, hey, will you give me back? But so it definitely just something that, I don't know.
Well, I mean, it's the same with music. I mean, so many, through all my 20s, that's what I did, bands. And then I had my heart broken and I was gone for a while and I had the opportunity to do it again. And now I'm 37 and I'm playing music with all these people that are in their 20s and sometimes their 30s. And I've said, you know, guitar is kind of like, it's an addiction and I'm not sure if it's a good one or a bad one. It could be like, you know, love or heroin. I haven't quite figured it out yet.
It's more like heroin.
Yeah. I just can't stop.
Or love. And both can kill you.
That's true.
You know, women kill men all the time.
Heroin's cheaper.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. So you said you went out to California. How long were you out there? Kind of what happened while you were out there and then what brought you back to Omaha?
Well, you know, yeah, when we went out there, we went to Costa Mesa Community College, and we just went out there. We wanted to do stand-up, you know. Mm-hmm. And I just hung out at the Comedy Store pretty much all the time. That's what I did. I mean, I did stand-up at internet cafes at 2 a.m., where in front of like two trannies and a crackhead. And the crackhead would be like, he came up, he's like, give me a quarter. I'm going to kill you. He kept going, I'm going to kill you. He got up to the stage. He's like, can I have a quarter? You got a quarter for me? I'm like, dude, what am I doing with my life? But it was exciting, you know? So I got to hang out at the Comedy Store. And then other than that, the life, it was just insane. I mean, I could tell stories for hours about people out there and just how everything works.
Is California the mecca for comics or is there a New York scene too? People say
New York, but... it would be an argument depending on who you talk to. I mean, I would never live in New York.
No one could ever make me live there. Is it kind of like Nashville for musicians then? Is the talent level just so high that it's really hard to get gigs?
California?
Yeah.
Well, everything's free.
Okay.
Okay, you got to do everything for free.
Okay.
Where you go. you know, so you're just working on your stuff. And then to get paid, you got to fly out of LAX and go do shows and stuff. But, you know, you're going to meet a lot of people. Industry will be in the crowd and stuff like that. But, yeah, so it was cool. I got to meet a lot of cool people and see some cool stuff. But the partying and just how everything operated. At one time, it was like five of us in a two-bedroom or four of us. But then you'd have everything's so expensive that you'd have all these dudes that live with people, and then their leases were constantly going up, but you would meet these friends, and they're not really your friends. They just live with you and or by you. Mm-hmm. And they'd be like, hey, man, can I crash at your place for a week? And we would be, or like a weekend, we'd be like, all right. And then they wouldn't leave. Like this one dude, Sean Daddy is what we called him. And Sean Daddy would look like Mike Tyson, and he was in his 30s, this black dude, but he bought us beer, and he was a super nice guy. But then he broke up with his girlfriend. She kicked him out. Hey, can I stay with you a weekend? Would not leave. Come to find out, he's like smoking meth. Mm. Mind you, we're like 20-year-olds, you know? And I just remember he'd be like standing in the kitchen, just like doing curls, you know? And we had this thing. I don't know how it got made up, but he'd be like, tick, 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 boom. I'm a time bomb blowing up the Marriott. You know, and you do all these curls and... I mean, he choked this woman in our apartment, and then these guys came up to fight him and kicked in our door, and he had like a butcher knife. And I mean, it was just, it was crazy. So I ended up moving home, and cause I was still with my girlfriend from high school, and she was in college. I'm like, all right, well, I'll come home and we'll get married and I'll move back out. But then life happens and stuff. Mm-hmm. And we ended up adopting our niece and, you know, and just a bunch of other stuff. Gotcha. And then at that point, I'm like, because I've already lived out there and lived in like the places that I could afford with the family.
Yeah.
And I'm like, there's no way I'm raising my family in the parts where I lived that I wasn't even comfortable in, you know, for that price.
Yeah.
So I'm like, if I ever go back out there, it'll be because I have, you know, money.
Yeah.
But at this point, I probably never will because they're psychopaths.
And do you have an agent at this point?
Yeah, I don't have anyone I'm like signed with, but I have agencies that book me shows.
But like when you were out there?
No.
When you were making $1.
No, dude, the crazy thing is,
do you have an agent taking 80 cents of it?
I was finally, when I moved home, I was finally like getting into places. Like I was getting into the Laugh Factory. I was getting into the Comedy Store. I was getting into the Ha Ha Cafe. Mm-hmm. Like people were calling me and asking me to do shows. And that was like at 20, 21. So had I stayed out there, then yeah, I would have been like a regular at Laugh Factory for sure. Comedy Store for sure. Ha Ha Cafe.
Okay.
Cause it was just starting to roll out. But
so then as that was happening, do you think you could have, you know, if the environment was better, do you think you could have made a living out there doing that? Or was still, you'd be working jobs?
It's more or less getting on TV out there.
Okay.
Which I think is more important.
Okay.
You know, that's why, you know, you really just don't make like a ton of money unless you're famous,
mm-hmm.
and you have to be on TV consistently, like in a show or something,
yeah.
where people get to know you and you build a brand and who you are, you know, and become famous so you can go out and be a draw for these clubs,
okay.
and stuff like that.
Okay.
So, that's the main reason to live out there.
Okay.
I would say.
Gotcha. So you moved back to Omaha, still doing comedy. so I guess, you know, how did the career progress from there? Did you just kind of keep doing what you were doing, or?
Yeah, man, I came back here and there was a comedy club downtown called Jokers that had been there for a while. This is when you could like smoke inside, yep. which I miss, by the way. I've never been a big smoker, but I miss it because it was like freedom.
Yeah.
There's something about being like in the dungy basement of an old building where everyone's smoking, telling jokes. It's kind of romantic.
Mick disagrees, but I would agree because playing the shows, I miss playing in the smoky bars. And honestly, like,
it's a feel like for an artist, it's more like, you know, you can't breathe and you smell terrible, but there's something about it.
I used to hate singing. I perform Irish music.
Oh, okay.
And like, great pub, the Dubliner, but you know, it's downstairs. There's no ventilation.
Yeah.
And you know, you'd walk out of that place with no voice and your clothes just like, I used to take my clothes off in the garage before I went in my house.
Them.
Yeah, I was like, "Oh, this is awful."
Yeah.
I don't know. It's different, but I guess singing.
Yeah, but now it's if you ever walk into a place and they smoke, you're like, "Oh, yeah. It brings back nostalgia."
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're like a pariah.
Yeah. No, I totally agree with you because, you know, I just have that, you know, smell is such a trigger for memory. And so some of my first gigs, playing in bars where there was smoking, or some of the first concerts that I went to, probably more so, were in smoky bars. And, you know, if you think about like history, those like a white Telecaster or a white Stratocaster from the 50s is yellow because of all this cigarette smoke that it's endured through the years. But then again, so has those musicians' lungs. So I suppose I'll probably live a little bit longer, maybe have less fun of a time. So
yeah.
Okay.
So yeah, I was down there at Joker's and I worked the door and I mopped and cleaned up after, but I got to stage time, got a host, and the club was packed. I mean, people were always coming in and it was awesome. And then the Funny Bone closed on 114th. Another place opened up, Jester's. Hardly anyone went in there. It was, you know, pretty slow, but hung out there, you know, every night that they were open, got a ton of stage time. And then when the Funny Bone opened back up, I just went up there. This guy introduced me to Colleen and I was like, I want to MC. And there was this other MC, Sean Gannat. And she was like, well, you know, there's Sean and stuff, but he ended up moving to LA. So there was no other comics at that point. So it was just me basically. So I didn't even have another job. I just hosted every weekend for a year or more.
Really? Okay.
Picked up all the comics from the airport, took them all to Radio and Todd and Tyler, and just got to just hang out and just meet all these people, you know, all these huge comics, people who've been doing it forever and just in lived comedy for
keep in touch with any of them?
And a half. Oh, yeah.
Yeah?
So yeah. I've pretty much, yeah, I've done this for long enough that, I mean, unless they're really, really big, I've pretty much worked with everyone.
Gotcha.
Met everyone.
Now, I found kind of with musicians, a lot of times, like whoever the lead guy is, not necessarily the jerk, they're a jerk or anything, you just don't get access to them, but like all the people in their bands are just awesome. Like some of the nicest people. Is that the same with comics? Like I'm sure there's a spectrum, but are they generally friendly? Can they be jerks, big assholes? Like,
Yeah. Some of them are friendly and awesome. And a lot of the more famous ones are terrible humans.
Gotcha.
Okay. Yeah. And a-holes. I don't want to get anything so specifically. Just because I do, but I don't because I know I'll have repercussions.
So does the industry make you become that? You know,
yeah, like, man. Well, you know, it's the thing. If you're just not happy where you're at, then you always want something more. So you just have a lot of guys that just want to get to the next level and the next level. And, you know, you see your peers and everyone start getting stuff and getting more recognition, more money, more fame and stuff like that. So then you want it. And if you're not careful, then you can become bitter, angry. Yeah. And then also just an egomaniac too, on the other spectrum of, you know, wanting people to do, you know, wipe your ass basically for you and expect everyone that to serve you.
Okay.
And stuff like that. So
yeah, the guys at the top in the fight game, the ones that are making the big money, they certainly shrink their circles pretty rapidly as they start to get more and more money because everybody wants something.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, immediately, man. Yeah, okay. Family will want stuff. You know, your friends, everything.
But the comics kind of look at you as having the hookup, and
yeah, you know, yeah. And so, I've done, you know, I've been there too, where I'm like, hey, you know, hook me up. But I don't do, that was, you know, when I was younger. Now I just don't really ask anyone for anything.
I was going to ask, so when we had Shay on the podcast, and do you say his name DeGan? DeGan? I totally said it wrong on the podcast. I said Deegan.
Oh, yeah. Oh, well. Yeah, you blew it hard.
I'll fix that. So Shay was telling
leave
us.
It.
You leave it?
Leave
well,
it.
Well, I'll just put it in the intro. Say,
his
I totally said it wrong.
Pucker every time you hear it.
I wondered why he looked funny at me when I said his name. So Shay was telling us, like, he did comedy, and I asked him if he was ever, you know, ever wanted to go back. And he's like, no, I've never thought about going back. And I said, well, why? Don't you think it'd be fun? He's like, I never enjoyed doing stand up. Like, you know, being a comic was awesome because you could go and you'd have a great morning. You know, you could sleep as late as you want, play video games. But he's like, as the show started to come forward, I started to get just like this knot in my stomach. Is it the same for you, or do you like look forward to shows? How does that go for you?
I'm waiting for the day to get over.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I can do the show.
Okay.
I mean, that's the best part. I love it. I mean, like a good show, it has to feel like how surfing feels.
Yeah.
You know, you just ride the laughs.
Yeah.
You know, if you get in a rhythm, you just go up, they laugh, you come down, they go up, they laugh, and you can just get in this rhythm, man.
Okay.
And when you're done, it's, there's nothing like it.
So is there an alter ego to a comic, or is this it? Like, are most comics, are you guys that transparent, or?
You got to turn it on, I think.
Okay.
You got to turn something on. Yeah, when you get in front of that many people.
Gotcha.
I mean, I'd be super tired, feel sick, and then get on stage and boom.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, you got to heighten whoever you are. You know.
That makes sense.
You got to set it up and bring it up to like the next level and then kind of gauge it towards how big the audience is.
Okay. So you may have already touched on this at least I was going to ask, what are some of like the highlights of your career and then also some of the lowlights? Now, you know, playing to a single Spanish lady in Compton may have been for $1.50 may have been a low light, or maybe that's a highlight.
No,
I don't know.
No, it was like in those days, I'm like, I'm doing this. And it was cool. Like, yeah, I mean, it was dangerous, but I liked the fact that I could say, yeah, dude, I was just in Compton.
Yeah.
You know,
I survived.
Yeah. I survived that. I don't know. The highlights are just the cool stuff that you get to do along the way.
Yeah.
And kind of the places that it takes you. And in December, I was just in the Caribbean, getting paid to go to the Caribbean, doing stand-up on a cruise ship. I'm going to do one in June where I get to go to Cuba.
Oh, wow.
And, you know, to being able to do TV shows and tour with comics and meet all these, you know, really funny, talented people and stuff. So there's that. I mean, the low end are just not making enough money and in the grind and getting screwed over by bookers, getting screwed over by clubs, having to sleep in your car. Like when I was younger, they'd be like, hey, you can come feature, but you don't get a hotel. So I'd sleep in my car at a hotel, in a hotel parking lot, wake up in the morning, go eat their free continental breakfast. I had a membership to 24-Hour Fitness. I'd go over there, work out, take a shower, you know, or go for a swim, take a shower, and then drive around all day, wait for the shows.
Cool. So I guess then transitioning to what I really want to talk to you about. So you alluded before to saying that you started with, you watched Sam Kinison, and that's really what turned you on to comedy, and you just loved that it was the place where you could say anything that you wanted.
Yeah.
You could just say whatever you thought about life.
Well, not true.
Not anymore.
It wasn't even back then.
Not back then?
Like, I mean, if you got to his level of fame, sure, but, you know, you go along, there's rules, you know, they care, they don't want you to wear shorts, or they complain about this, or, you know, say this, and you know, there's definitely business side and structure to it.
Yeah.
So the initial vision I thought that stand up was crushed over time. And what else?
Well, so basically part of what we're trying to accomplish with this podcast is, you know, there's a demasculization going on in our country as well as everything else. And it seems like comedy is one of the art forms that's really kind of suffered the most from that.
Yeah, they want to destroy it.
Yeah. And not so much maybe masculization, but just being able to say what you want to say. And, you know, I imagine maybe 10, 15 years ago, you could get away with saying some stuff that these days, if you said it, you'd be destroyed. And as a comic, you seem to be, I mean, we're going to talk about your podcast a little bit later, but your podcast is called Comic Exiled, because I imagine some of the stuff you talk about is not popular. How are you kind of navigating that these days? How do you?
I don't know, man. I mean, I used to care a lot when I was younger, but I mean, I call it that also just because, you know, I'm not in LA, I'm not in New York, I'm out in, you know, the fields out of the country. of Nebraska. And then also just because a lot of my political beliefs, if you want to call them that, don't mesh with what Hollywood is. Like I could never, it's so weird about, and I'll call them, there's liberals and then there's radical liberals. You know, that's what I think. You know, there's radicals on both sides. The radical liberals, you know, want to control what you say. They don't want to be made fun of.
Yeah.
I mean, I even had like a really good friend of mine, you know, saying I was making fun of global warming and science, and they're like, that offends me. Like, you're offended by it? You know, you were just making fun of this, and all these other things, and they'll want to jump on you for it. And, you know, that's happened just all over the place.
Okay.
You know, with comedy club, you know, blocking me or unfollowing me for making fun of Michelle Obama. Like, good jokes, comic friends, unfollowing me because they can't take their political party being made fun of. Like, I had the greatest joke ever. I mean, not ever, but it was super funny.
Yeah.
And it was just, you know, when Elizabeth Warren, when they fired Jeff Sessions, she sent out a tweet that said he shouldn't be fired. But then there was a tweet previously saying when he was hired that he should be fired. So I just put both those, you know, tweets up on Facebook and said, what an Indian giver. And it's the greatest joke.
I love it.
It's so awesome. You know, and then I have like a liberal friend calling me, your shitty Indian jokes, and I got to unfollow you. I love you as a comic and like our conversations, but this isn't a time for that. And it's like unhinged.
Yeah.
About it.
Yeah. And we're seeing a lot of comedians go down for things that they've said.
And it was unhinged. If you listen to this, I just went, I'm talking straight to this person.
Yeah.
And you know, it was. All right. I still love you though.
So, yeah, I mean, we've seen a lot of comics go down. More recently, Kevin Hart got kicked off the Oscars. Mm-hmm. It seems like every other day there's a tweet that pops up from 10 years ago, 20 years ago.
Yeah,
saying something mildly controversial back then. That's,
dude, it's scary, man. Social media, they'll dig you up. Like, you're not allowed to evolve and change at all with the internet.
Yeah.
Like, if they can find something that you did in the past and dig it up to destroy you for whatever reason, they will. And it doesn't have to be homophobic or anything. It could be anything.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's you know, a frightening aspect of it for sure. But it's, you know, it's comedy. You're supposed to make fun of how absurd life is.
Yeah.
And nothing should be off limits, like everything. You can't be like, okay, well, this is protected. This is protected.
Mm-hmm.
You can't say anything about these people. But then you target this other group of people, you know?
Right.
Either we're all the same or we're not.
Right.
And we all have things that we can, that can be poked fun at and joke about. It's important to laugh at yourself.
That absurdity and just kind of license to make fun of it all is, I guess I'm lucky that I grew up in Ireland and, you know, my early exposure to comedy was like raunchy Benny Hill, Monty Python. That was just cheeky, but yet being aired on the stodgiest, you know, British TV channel. And then late at night, well, not that late, but, you know, they would have this stuff going on. And it was just like, that was like almost a release from the stodgy shit that you'd watch the rest of the day or had to listen to for, you know, Monty Python, Benny Hill, some of these other great comics that were probably pushing the envelope, but it didn't seem like they were pushing really anything to us. We just kind of grew up with it. It was funny. You know, I don't think they ever really got any trouble for it that I know of.
No.
And all like very highly educated guys that were making a living, making other people laugh.
Yeah.
That could certainly probably beat the shit out of you in a debate about any of these things too, especially like the Monty Python team and all that. Those guys were all like Oxford educated.
Yeah. Yeah. They were incredible.
Yeah.
Bright. You know, with satire and writing and everything.
Yeah.
So when you go into a club these days or any type of gig, do you just, obviously you've got to tailor your material to the audience, but do you, like, if you're playing one club, will you go super in one direction, another club, like kind of censor yourself so that you don't get in trouble, or you just kind of say whatever you want whenever you want?
Yeah. I mean, and the thing is that like my stuff's not out of control.
Yeah.
You know, it's just more or less, I want to be able to say what I want to make fun of.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it could just depend.
Yeah.
You know, but I don't cuss in my act. I mean, you might catch me once in a while, but yeah, I don't, I just kind of go up there and just do my thing.
Okay.
So we're talking about absurdity.
Yeah.
And you kind of touched on like how absurd this social political climate seems to be in this country right now. And there's, you know, for me as an immigrant, it's probably the most ununited I've ever seen the country.
It's truly a terrifying time. I don't see how it could get any better.
I was going to ask you, what is it going to take?
I don't even think anymore. I think that after the whole white kid, MAGA hat, Indian guy that, you know, we've turned a whole other page because of the way that the media pushed that and, you know, shoved it so fast and took so long to retract it, you know, because media outlets, they don't care. They just, it seems like they post a story, and then if they have to retract it, it doesn't matter as long as they can destroy,
get the headlines,
the other side, because a lot of people never go back to look at the retraction.
Right.
How many people are really going to take the time to watch a 2-hour, you know, video of that protest or whatever was going on to see what really happened?
Right.
They're just going to go, you know, and then the argument is it doesn't matter. He was wearing a MAGA hat.
Exactly.
MAGA hats are swastikas. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, all right, well, where is Donald Trump shoveling people into an oven? Mm-hmm. How could you even say that it's a swastika? So it's more or less the media is so insane now that it's constant, like 24 hours a day. You know, you have the internet, Facebook, socials everywhere, and both sides are publishing stuff that's fake to destroy the other. So it's like at one point there's only so much I can take, and I'm sure everyone else is the same, before we all have like a psychotic break.
Yeah.
And So it's even hard to like find stuff to that's funny anymore, because stuff is so, people are so on edge and wanting to destroy the people that they don't believe in, that it's hard.
Well, there's a book that I read, actually in the process of reading. It's called Trust Me, I'm Lying by Ryan Holiday. Not sure if you've ever heard it, but basically he was PR for American Apparel, and he talks all about this, how you can manipulate the media, and how it's a bottom feeding. Because if we look at that story with the kid in the MAGA hat, it started from a single tweet from an unverified Twitter feed. They basically, I think it was supposed to be some teacher in California, and the picture was a blogger in Brazil. It was an account that it was opened in 2016, and nobody knows where it came from. So the video got posted on that, picked up by BuzzFeed, picked up by...
Sure.
And then it BuzzFeed. Just exploded. And he talks exactly about that, how he used to do that all the time. And one thing that he talked about I found just ridiculous was how much media actually goes to Wikipedia for information. So he was given a story about, he was promoting I Hope They Serve Beer in Hell.
Oh yeah.
The Tucker Max book that was turned into a movie. Mm-hmm. And he was talking about how their Wikipedia page said it had been sporadic on the New York Times list for over 2 years. And so he's like, they knew that the New York Times was going to do a story on them. So what he did is he went back and he changed that from being sporadically on the New York Times bestseller list for 2 years to being on the New York Times bestseller list for 2 years. And there's a big difference between being on there on and off and being on there for solid for 2 years.
Sure.
Well, the New York Times came back and did an article based their information off of that Wikipedia page and said that the book had been on their own list for 2 solid years. Mm. And so then he was able to go back then and grab that headline and verify on the Wikipedia page with the New York Times article saying that Tucker Max's book had been on there for 2 years, when in fact it had been on and off for 2 years. So
there you go. Yeah, it's like everyone's lying. Who do you even believe?
Right. And some of the details of that might be a little bit off. Go ahead and read the book. But that's the gist of the story, is that there's really no verifying anymore, and I think people are just going to see what they want to see regardless of the facts.
Yeah, what are you going to do? You know, Snoops is run by two crazy people.
Yeah,
one lady, just a fat chick with cats who are waiting to eat her, and her husband left her for a hooker. That's who runs Snoops. So there you go.
Wow,
you can trust it. Wikipedia that.
Yeah. So we're kind of talking about young people. Have you ever played a room full of young people today?
Oh, yeah. I just did a college.
How hard is that?
You know, I just go, I just play.
For first of all, what kind of a college was it?
It was a Christian college.
Oh.
And, you know, you just, when you go on, you got to have confidence, and you just got to go with it. But you just, with the young people too, you just get a lot more moans. You know, like, oh,
yeah.
Like, I'm seeing that a lot more. Like, not laughs, like, oh, you can't say that. No. So it's, I mean, I wouldn't prefer it. I mean, Chris Rock and Jerry Seinfeld won't even do colleges.
Right.
And they're both flaming liberals. Mm. Tell me that.
Yeah.
I won't do it. They're too PC. Yeah, they're your people. You're going to go, they're too PC. Instead, you're going to go pay $50,000 a plate for Hillary Clinton or whoever else. And Jerry Seinfeld is the most milquetoast comic ever. Hilarious.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Incredible joke writer. but he doesn't even want to do colleges. Like, what does that tell you?
Well, yeah.
I want Sam Kinison to come back to life and do a college tour.
I don't think he would probably leave his house. He'd probably be pretty disgusted.
I don't know, dude. That dude was fearing. He was getting bomb threats back then and didn't care.
Really?
He'd be like, let him bomb us. Yeah, because I worked with his best friend, Carl LeBeauf. And Carl LeBeauf was, I mean, Carl LeBeauf ended up, he opened for him every show, met him in Texas. That's the guy, Sam Kinison died in his arms. And then come to find out when his daughter was like 10, he's like, oh, you look a lot like Sam Kinison. Well, it was his kid. That doesn't do so wow. That he was wow. pissed about that. But the guy was, yeah, they'd get, because he did a lot of gay jokes and they'd get bomb threats. And he's like, I don't care.
Wow.
I don't care. Because he had one of the best things. He did this insane joke that's really hardcore about how you get AIDS. And people freaked out, you know, and that's not medically correct. So he did this bit, you know, later on. And he's like, yeah, the last time, he's like, when I went to medical school, I promised myself that I would never tell a medically incorrect joke. You know, and the takeaway of that is like, dude, I'm just a comic. I'm just making fun of things.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But now you got to be like scientific and make sure that it, you know, get all your facts straight.
Yeah.
Like I'll make fun of global warming and people will send me an email, me all these, you know, documents. I'm like, dude, I'm not reading your documents.
Yeah. Well, and I was just thinking, you said you played at Christian College. And
yeah.
So, I was actually thinking about this the other day. It seems like if you go back in the 90s, like the Christians were the most easily offendable.
Sure.
Like they were boycotting the Lion King because the dust spelled sex in the air.
Yeah, which,
or,
yeah, which, you know, they thought. Which they should have.
Yeah, the preacher had an erection.
And he did. I remember going through, we watched it all. We looked for all those Easter eggs before the internet.
Hey, yeah. I missed all this shit.
Yeah.
On the cover of Little Mermaid, it's like a, you know, like a coming penis. So, yeah. Just so you know.
So, Now it seems to be the complete opposite. Like
it is, man.
Like
if they made Footloose today, it would not be a Christian preacher. It would be a liberal mayor.
Yeah.
So have you ever offended anyone that you had to have a face to face with them? Like right in the middle of your act or afterwards or?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I was doing a show. I was making fun of Caitlyn Jenner. And basically the joke is, okay, you want women's rights, but then you're for transgendered rights, but a dude cuts off his wiener, wears a dress, wins Woman of the Year. So how does that work?
Yeah.
You're like, a dude just took, like, there's a lot of women accomplishing great things out there, but because he put on a dress and cut his wiener off, you're Woman of the Year.
Yeah.
I'm like, you can't. Like that sucks for you women.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
How could you want rights in this and then have it stolen from you? So that's basically
a dude just won your best award.
Yeah. Yeah. And then someone, he's just stole it from you. That's one of my favorite thing in the world is when dudes become chicks and then just like wrestle women and beat the crap out of them. Because that's what you get.
Yeah.
Like that's your karma. Like you created this monster. Put it back in the box. You can't. And so and this woman stands up, she's like, you can't make fun of trans in the comedy club and I'm like, dude, I'll make fun of whoever I want.
Mm-hmm.
So she leaves. She's yelling at the manager. And even the manager's on my side. Like, it's a comedy club.
Yeah.
You don't want to be offended. Don't come.
Yeah.
You know, you need to leave. And she's going on. I don't know. She's like, eight trans, kill themselves every year. And then I shouldn't have got in. I was like, those are pretty good numbers. which is just, right now people are like, that's terrible to say. It might be, but that's the comic in me, I suppose.
Yeah.
And speaking of which, I was debating on even doing this. I'm sitting in the parking lot going through Facebook. And one of my good friend's moms posted that picture of Martin Luther King covering Donald Trump's mouth. Have you seen that? Someone painted it on a building side. So it's Martin Luther King like shushing and going like this. And then Donald Trump is like about to tweet. You know, he's like telling him to be quiet. And I just tagged it. I'm like, don't tell anyone we had an orgy. Because I don't know, like all those JFK files came out and apparently, Martin Luther King was having a ton of orgies.
Yeah.
And loved sex.
Yeah.
So I debated I shouldn't do this and then I did it.
Yeah.
So we'll see what happens.
So this whole hour, you're going to come back to your Facebook and it's going to be melting down.
Yeah, it usually does.
Yeah.
It usually has.
Well, and that's the thing that bugs me so much about these days is that, virtue signaling, right? People act like they're perfect, especially online. Now, it seems to be less drastic in person, and so that's one of the things I was going to ask you.
Yeah, so that happened, and then another thing that happened is around the same period of time, there was, you know, because there's all these hipster comedy clubs popping up and stuff, and a lot of them don't like me, but I went down to this venue that they're playing at because one of my best friends was there and in town having a beer, and they were like, there was a stand-up show going on. It was pretty packed, and they're like, hey, this one dude's going to go up and do some time. So I did, kind of same kind of jokes, you know, no one laughed. But then when that happens, I just get on rant. I just keep hammering it and hammering it and hammering it, you know, and I don't care that there are no laughs. And so I leave. And then this other guy that I went to high school with that I was nothing but nice to and helped out, you know, and encouraged along the way, just starts talking like crap behind my back, like screw Austin, what a heck, screw him. If I knew he was going to make trans jokes, I'd never asked him to do it or let him and all this stuff.
Is he doing this on stage while you're
gone?
No,
he's doing it behind to a bunch of people. And then one of my best friends is there. So he gets into it with him and tells me about it. So the next day he's in town, he's in Lincoln, and I just go down to Lincoln. And I happen to come inside right when he's on stage, sit down in the front row, look at him, wait till it comes off. I was like, if you got something to say, man, say it to my face.
Yeah.
You're going to talk crap behind my back? I go, you're making fun of, you know, this, this, and this, and this. And I can't poke fun at a guy who's famous, number mm-hmm. one, and the fact that he stole a title from women when women want credit. I'm going, it's a legitimate point,
mm-hmm.
you know, and there's irony in that.
Yeah.
You know, he's like, well, we'll just disagree. And I was just like, be a man, man.
Yeah.
Be a man. I will hunt you down.
Hopefully we'll inspire a few more of those with this podcast.
Yeah.
That's the goal. Because, yeah, that's one of the biggest, my biggest pet peeves. Like, if you got a problem, just say it to my face. Like,
oh, yeah.
I'm not going to punch you.
I might.
Eh,
no,
you might,
I won't. I wouldn't. I wouldn't. No.
So, I guess from there... still doing stand-up now, and you've got...
Yeah.
There used to be... I know you've got your new Comic Exile podcast. Are
you
on any other podcast, or is that your primary one
now? Yeah, that's just the only one.
So tell us a little bit about that. What are you doing with it, and
you
where
know,
can people find it?
I'm kind of just figuring that out, mm-hmm. and, you know, I'm going to have people on, you know, hopefully have you guys on, and just see where it goes, and just trying to do it every day, and kind of just a different perspective on the world and comedy and kind of pushing back against, you know, being emasculated and kind of the agenda that media, you know, pushes. Like that article you sent me one about, mm-hmm. you know, seven things that men need to get rid mm-hmm. of.
Yeah.
You know, and it's insanity.
Yeah.
Don't learn how to fix anything around your house. Learn how to decorate.
Yeah.
I mean, every list is literally just like, hey, cut your wiener off, put on a dress, be a woman. And I'm just not going to live that life at all. And so there's just a lot of that. I don't want people telling me what I can and can't say. I don't want mm-hmm. people telling me how to live. And I mean, they're pretty much.
Yeah. And I've listened to several episodes of your podcast, and I really enjoy it. And that it's fresh to me because I just get so, I feel the same way. I'm not interested in telling anybody how to live their life, but I'm even less interested in someone telling me how to live mine.
Yeah, like it's like if you tell me I can't do something, I'm going to do it. That's like what it is for a lot of people.
Right.
So if you tell me I can't make fun of something, I have to make fun of it. You know, just like how a flasher has to pull his wiener out at Walmart, you know? Like he's like, "Oh, I can't do this." Ah!
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm just tired that you sometimes have to that it's even a thought that what you might say is going to offend somebody.
Yeah.
You know, and so like you're censoring yourself, or you could, all the goddamn time before you even should I say this?
Yeah.
Like what happened to just saying it? And then if you need to reel it back, go, yeah, that was probably,
that
was a little harsh, you know.
There are.
And then everybody gets along and it's forgotten about you know.
Which happens.
Yeah.
And, but yeah, when the worst is if you give into that fear and care what people think, then you just become less funny.
Yeah.
Because I've been there. Oh, I can't say that. That could offend this person. Oh, I can't say that. That could offend this person. And pretty soon it's like, what do you have left? You know, you're just making fun of inanimate objects and waffles.
Yeah.
not funny at all.
And that's the thing that I've loved about comedy for so long. I mean, I love watching South Park because nothing is off limits. At least nothing used to be off limits.
Yeah, and it's fantastic.
Yeah. And then, you know, as that started to go away and as, you know, comics had to become fearful of that, it was just, but, you know, these days, I can't even post a picture of me petting my dog on YouTube without getting haters. So the fact that someone like is able to stand up and say stuff that's going to be truly controversial, even though it's not really that controversial. I don't know. I just really appreciate that, that you're willing to do that. Yeah. And, you know, we'll support you.
Yeah. Thanks guys.
So
yeah, you can find my podcast at comicexiled.com.
Okay. Comicexiled.com.
Yeah.
Is it on like iTunes or anything like that? Or just,
yeah, it should be. I submitted it, you know, I just started this recently, but yeah, it should be pretty soon, Okay. Stitcher and Google Play and iTunes.
Awesome.
And all that good stuff. And we'll see what happens. You know, a lot of days I try to make it as funny as I can, but then I get super pissed off too because I see things like yesterday I just posted an interview I did a while back. I said my own radio show at one point with the guy that hunts Bigfoots.
Okay.
This billionaire gave him, they were at dinner. They were arguing about if Bigfoot's real. He's like, yeah, I could find Bigfoot. And billionaire's like, all right, you know, here's six figures. Go find him. So they hunt Bigfoot, and I played that.
He's not in this bar. He's not in this restaurant.
I'm getting into the news, and I'm just like, I can't handle it. You know, I am pro-life. We adopted my niece. Tried to adopt another girl who's going to have an abortion, but she ended up keeping it. And, you know, my wife's and I have, she's suffered miscarriages and stuff. So I'm just adamantly and unapologetically pro-life. So when I see that now New York's like, yeah, kill a baby day before it's born. And then they light up the World Trade Center. And then there's a video where they're all wearing pink and cheering and applauding with joy the murder of kids. I'm like, dude, this world is too evil, man. Like this place is just too evil for me. So then I just got to like pull back because I can't believe like the fact that you would celebrate with smiles and applaud that now you can kill a baby the day before it's born. Like that's some wicked shit, man. Yeah. We're on a whole nother page now. That's like the, you know, whenever that Al Pacino movie where the devil lives in New York, the devil's advocate.
Devil's advocate, yeah.
Yeah, maybe it's real.
Jeez.
Maybe the devil is in New York.
Could be.
All right. Well, and funny, you were talking about Bigfoot. We're actually interviewing a Yeti next.
Yeah.
So, are you?
Yeah, nice. You might see him on the way out. But, we really appreciate you coming on. Any last words? Any parting words?
No, man. I mean, I don't have any list.
Do you have any gigs coming up? If people want to go see you?
You know, yeah, by the time this gets posted, it'll be over. But, I mean, I'd say it. I'm going to Okoboji Winter Games Friday, Saturday.
Okay. Do you have, do you have like austinanderson.com?
Yeah, austinanderson.net. And I try to post my dates on there, but I do a lot of private shows.
Okay.
So I don't put them up. But coming up, you know, February, I'm just gone all the time doing corporate shows. And then I'm going to Arkansas for some shows, Wichita. Pretty much South Dakota.
Yeah.
Just wherever.
How many days a year are you on the road?
Well, you know, I worked for the radio and had my own radio show till August 6th when they sold all the stations and I got let off. So I wasn't doing it as much, but now, pretty much every weekend if I can be.
Okay. Awesome.
And if I'm not out of town, then I'm doing stand up around here.
And then during the week,
I got a lot of downtime. I was actually talking to Shay before now because I want to. They got a lot of cool courses here at Tactical 88. Yeah,
absolutely.
And they got a part-time job for membership sales. It's like 15 hours a week. So I was like, dude. And I've done, you know, going up and doing stand-up. Like I worked in sales a bunch.
Oh yeah.
And I've done it. And I was like, man, I'm like, can I have that job? He's like, yeah, dude. So I'm going to talk to him. I'll fill that in.
Nice.
So I might work here 15 hours a week, sell gun memberships, shoot guns. Yeah. Learn how to snap necks.
We don't talk about guns on this. We'll teach you that part. It's a little too controversial.
Oh, you don't? Good.
Yeah, I'm joking.
Instead of guns, learn how to knit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, geez. All right. Well, Austin, thank you so much for being on.
Yeah, man. Absolutely. Thanks for asking me.
I wouldn't be surprised if we could get you back on here again.
Oh, yeah. Anytime, man. I'm down.
All right.
I love this stuff.
All right.
Very cool.
We'll talk to you later.
All right. Thanks, man.
All right, so Austin had to take off, get to his next thing, but we still wanted to get you the book of the week and the workout of the week. So I'll go ahead and start with the book. So this book is by one of my, I wouldn't say favorite authors because he hasn't really written that much, but he's an entrepreneur. His name is Derek Sivers. He's the guy that founded CD Baby. Yeah. And so I was actually familiar with him before I actually knew what he did, just because I used CD Baby, you know, way back in the early 2000s to put my music out. So he wrote a little book many years ago. It's called Anything You Want. I lost the dust sleeve to this book. This book is a super fast read. You can probably read it in about an hour. And really what it is, it's a distillation of some of his best blog posts. I follow his blog. He's kind of a philosopher and, you know, all he's got a lot of different kind of cool viewpoints. And some, I really enjoy his point of view. So I was going to read, one passage here from the book. It's called Proudly Exclude People. And I'm sure that triggers a lot of people right there. But I'll read, his thinking behind it. Says, you know you can't please everyone, right? But notice that most businesses are trying to be everything to everybody, and they wonder why they can't get people's attention. You need to confidently exclude people and proudly say what you're not. By doing so, you will win the hearts of the people you want. Hotel Cafe, a folk and rock music venue in Los Angeles, is a no-talking club. Big signs say no talking during performances. Performers are encouraged to stop the show if someone was talking and let the person know that he can go to any other club in town and talk over the music. This is the one place in LA where you can sit and really listen to the music. This, of course, makes it the most popular music venue in town. When CD Baby got popular, I'd get calls from record labels wanting to feature their newest, hottest acts on our site. And I'd say, nope, they're not allowed here. The record label guys would be like, huh? What do you mean you're not allowed? You're a record store. We're a record label. I'd say, you can sell anywhere else. This is a place for independents only. Musicians who choose not to sign their rights over to a corporation. To make sure these musicians get the maximum exposure they deserve, no major label acts are allowed. It's a big world. You can loudly leave out 99% of it. Have the confidence to know that when your target 1% hears you excluding the other 99%, the people in that 1% will come to you because you've shown how much you value them. So really this book is, it's a lot on entrepreneurship, and it's kind of geared toward the music industry, but the lessons that he teaches can really be used for any type of business. So once again, the name of the book is Anything You Want by Derek Sivers. Really quick read and some just really concentrated, distilled good information on it. So that is the book of the week. I will have that on the bookshelf on thegentlemanbadass.com as well as the workout of the week.
And the workout of the week today is actually a boxing workout. It's very simple. You only need to know two punches, the jab and the cross. The jab is always done with your lead hand. The cross is done with the rear hand. Both are straight punches. This workout starts off like this. You get close to the bag and you throw two fast jabs, basically, literally as fast as you can. Then you're going to take a half a step back and you're going to lever two power jabs with the same hand into the bag. Then I'll go three fast, take a step back, three hard. Step back in on the bag, four fast, four hard, five fast, and so on until I hit 10. Once I've hit 10 jabs, I'll switch my stance. I'll go southpaw and I will be using my right hand this time. Same sequence. I'll go two fast, two hard, three fast, three hard, all the way up to 10. Once I've done that, I'm going to switch back to the left side and begin the drill all over. This drill you want to do without a break. So you will keep on punching until you have done 5 sets on each hand. 5 sets on each hand. 2 fast, 2 hard, 3 fast, 3 hard, 4 fast, 4 hard, all the way up to 10 with the left hand. Go to the right hand, and that is 1 set of 5, and then you do 5 sets. If you have the energy, if your arms don't already feel like lead, the next thing you'll do is you'll stand in front of the bag and you'll throw jab cross as hard as you can. A jab cross will count as 1. I'll do 10 of them, then 10 push-ups. 8 push-ups, 6 push-ups, 4 push-ups, 2 jab crosses, and 2 push-ups to finish it. and your arms should be toast.
Yeah, I remember that workout.
Yeah, we did parts of it this year in the 2019 punch workout, which just had actually two sets instead of five. Workout is very quick. It should take you probably less than 20 minutes to do the whole thing.
Yeah, I think by the time I got to the push-ups, I mean, I might have done the first 10 normal, and then I was on my knees for the rest of them. And it was sloppy on my knees.
And so. Josh brought up a good point. If you do need, if you do have the energy to try to do the push-up drill, and you have to go to your knees to finish the push-ups, that's fine. Just get the numbers in.
Yeah, better form. Good form is better than bad form, obviously. Yep. So
the workout of the week.
All right, I will put that in the show notes. As always, thegentlemanbadass.com. We've got merch. We've got our hats. We've got mindset journals. We're going to keep adding to that collection, as well as the bookshelf. We'll have all of the books that we've featured as the book of the week on the bookshelf. And then also we'll have Patreon launched, hopefully by the time this comes out. You can get on there and support us. We'll have actually several different tiers with some cool things like discounts on merch.
Bonus footage.
Yeah,
we'll have some videos.
Exactly. Exclusive stuff that you can only see on Patreon. And then all the way up to potentially one-on-one mentoring via Skype or even in the gym if you're in the local area through that. So check out the Patreon. And check out our website. If you're on YouTube, please subscribe. That helps us quite a bit. Right now, YouTube kind of changed the rules, so we don't have a dedicated domain. But if you go to our website, there's a YouTube link and it'll take you right there. Or if you just search The Gentleman Badass on YouTube, you should be able to pull it up. So really appreciate you listening. Any final words, thoughts?
No, we just want to encourage you guys to keep sharing this. If you believe in what we're trying to do, that it's okay to do manly things and be a good human being, which is really kind of the crux of what we're all about here, share this and spread the word for us.
Excellent. Well, we will talk to you next time. Tell me this. If you were looking for someone to spend the rest of your life with, would you settle for the first person who swipes right on Tinder? I don't think so. The rest of your life is a huge commitment, so you're going to want to take the time and spend the money to find a quality match. Now tell me this, why should getting a tattoo be any different? Do you really think going to the lowest bidder is going to give you a tattoo you're happy with for the rest of your life? That's where my friends at Big Brain Tattoo come in. Big Brain is located at 1123 Jackson Street in Omaha, Nebraska, and is home to some of the best tattoo artists in the world. Swing by the shop and say hi to my buddies Lenny Rankin and Dominic Holmes, and while you're there, get an appointment scheduled for the tattoo of your dreams. If it's more convenient, you can also swing by Big Brain West out in the Shops of Legacy and schedule an appointment with Seth Agar. These are the guys Mick and I trust for all of our tattoos, and we think you'll be happy doing the same. Thank you to Big Brain and Big Brain West for sponsoring the Gentleman Badass podcast, and you can find them at bigbrainomaha.com.